I am from beyond. Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
Welcome to Prattle World. I am your host, the ever-amazing, ever-spectacular Spider-Dan, and in this podcast, I spotlight entertainment's best-kept secrets that a mainstream audience may find boring. Welcome back, guys. This is a new iteration of the podcast. In the next couple of weeks, I'm going to try to do a new iteration each time. I want to do, diversity is the spice of life. What's the word?
Variety.
Variety, that's the word I was looking for. Thank you. And I am joined once again by one of my favourite semi-regular guests. It's Dan Keatis. Welcome back.
Happy to be back, sir.
So you're going to join me today and we are going to do the very first Comic Terry, which is us doing commentaries on animated series, episodes and animated movies as well, based on comics.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited to start talking about some comic-related animation.
Oh yes, some of the best, some of the best. And I brought some over for you to divulge into.
You brought over a lot. Yeah,
I'll be honest. Out of all the DVDs I own, the most I own is animated stuff. Like, I've got this big case of DVDs. On one section, one row is purely animation.
There's a lot of it as well. And I think if for people who get into comic book properties and comic book heroes from the films and want to sort of explore those characters and those stories, but aren't necessarily inclined to pick up comics, I think the animated shows do a great job of diving a little deeper than the films, because they have that long format, serialized storytelling. They can do that, but also they're less involved and less sort of esoteric than the comics, because the comics can be a bit intimidating to newcomers.
No, I think you're absolutely right. You know, if I saw X-Men the Animated Series, that got me into comics.
Yeah,
there was a good kind of breeding ground for me for all those kind of characters and the kind of the adventures they would go on, the issues they would tackle every week. I still keep up to date for the most part with most animated series because I still have a vested interest in them, and I think the DC animated movies are incredible, still are to this day.
Yeah,
still,
absolutely.
Reign of the Superman, Death of Superman goes to prove that they're still churning out some of the best stuff.
Yeah, and they've got one based on Hush coming up soon.
I can't wait for that. Right, so should we just go for it? Should we get started?
Yeah, sorry, we're best to introduce the subject matter.
Yes, no, that is a good point. You see, I'm all over the show today. I'm all over the show. So today, the particular one we're going to be looking at is Superman the Animated Series, which is the follow-on from Batman the Animated Series, which is a very popular...
Yeah, the lesser-known follow-on. And I feel the reason why sort of it's in this podcast, because we're obviously all about entertainment's best-kept secrets.
Oh,
and
yes.
I think that this is a massively sort of underappreciated moment in pop culture. You know, when I've been listening to a lot of Batman podcasts, and a lot of people cite Batman the Animated Series as what got them into them to fall in love with Batman. And I think this does a lot of the same things for Superman as Batman the Animated Series did for Batman. But for some reason, people talk about the Batman Animated Series a lot. They talk about the Justice League Animated Series a lot. And I feel like this one kind of slips through the cracks a little bit. And
totally agree.
It's a shame because it really is stellar in so many ways.
It's so good. And for me, the DC Animated Universe, the DCAU, is for me the definitive version of these characters. For me personally, great comics out there, don't get me wrong, some great movies out there. But when I think of the classic versions of these characters, be it Killer Croc or, you know, the Parasite or, you know, all the other characters you can name, these are the ones I go to. I'll go, is it like this? Is it like that Mad Hatter? Is that Mad Hatter like the one in the comic? Not really. You know, it's like that. So this is my kind of cornerstone, my kind of Rosetta Stone for all the DC universe, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Gives you everything you need everything you need to know about these characters, this world, this universe.
In a classic yet modern format.
Which
is entertaining for both adults. Some great, there's a really good episode which I'd like to do later on another time, The Late Mr. Kent.
Which is probably
the best episode in the whole of this series.
Funny you should mention that. I was just watching that episode the other day. It's a really cool sort of noir. Ooh. It proves that you can do Superman
mystery,
in a noir murder mystery.
Yeah,
totally.
It's great. So I think it's time to get started. Would you like to introduce it? Would you like
Yes, absolutely. Set it up so, for us? So what we're doing is we're watching the pilot episode, which is a three-parter, The Last Son of Krypton. So what we'll do is we'll count in each of these three parts as we go along. Mm. So we're on obviously part one right now. By all means, watch along with us. If you're Please watching do. It on DVD or iTunes, we're watching it on iTunes. So at the moment, your count should be at 0000. You should be looking at a blank screen, and we're going to get started. In are you ready? We're gonna get started in 3, 2, 1, and we're rolling.
Okay, so
we're now on the, you should now see the Warner Brothers logo and Bugs Bunny
WB
having a bit of a bite out of a carrot.
So I've got a little trivia fact about the intro.
Oh, yeah, I think I have the same trivia one. Fact. Yeah, go on.
So we'll share. So from what I heard, they were going to have a very similar intro to the classic Batman animated series intro.
Yeah, I'd heard that too, yeah.
However, I think the budget was significantly cut on Superman. So they had to kind of put together this, which is clips from basically the first few episodes.
Yeah, then it, for all intents and purposes, the same thing, sort of like sizzle reel. But I think the only thing that, I think there were a couple of little bits that made it in, like this bit you can see right here of Superman.
The blue outline.
Yeah,
Superman
flying through Metropolis, that was in for it. And the last monk with the shirt.
Of course, yeah. And the kind of the stock image of him, it's kind of a silhouette. Much
yeah, like in the end credits, yeah. Yeah. But this is everything you need to know about is him rescuing people, him fighting robots, him fighting aliens.
Lex Luthor, here he is, smashing his table. And there we go, classic emblem, boom, and we're in.
And that's one of the few times we actually get to see a shirt rip in this show. I was disappointed.
You know what? You are absolutely right. I can't picture one throughout the entire series. So this is written by Alan Burnett and Paul Dini. So this is the main people involved with this, you'd argue, is probably Bruce Timm, Paul Dini, Alan Burnett. Who else written? Dwayne McDuffie?
Yeah. Kurt Gieder, Dan Reber. You're in good company, yes. Basically.
Good people who have gone on to do lots of other stuff. Potentially not as good as the DCAU stuff, I'd argue, but still absolutely amazing talent.
Yeah, and just so much love for the source material. And here we are, we're on Krypton, and it's the surface of Krypton. It's a very different Krypton to what we've seen in, I suppose, for most people. You've got the source material, so it borrows quite heavily from the post-crisis sort of John Byrne, Man of Steel era comics, and it's kind of a bit from the Richard Donner Superman.
Yeah, it kind of cherry-picks the best of everything.
Yeah, so you've got this glacial kind of aesthetic, but as we'll see later, they kind of do their own thing with Krypton. Man of Steel, I for my money, Man of Steel, the film, offers the best sort of version of Krypton.
Yeah.
But I think it borrows from this in a lot of ways, which are really interesting. But I really like the fact that every sort of screen iteration of the Superman origin you've got, it starts with Jor-El telling the council Krypton's going to explode. And what I love about this is Jor-El's doing the science, he's doing the research, and now he's just been attacked by a giant jelly tentacle monster.
Well, it's a kid's cartoon. At the end of the day, we've got to have something like this.
Yeah.
Look, it's kind of like a brain, green with a tongue.
Yeah.
It's very Cronenbergian. Definitely.
And then he's got like almost but not quite a lightsaber, which he uses to cut himself free.
Kind of almost like a flare or something. So he's jumping in. But yeah, this shows that like Jor-El's not just, you know, a passive scientist. He's a man of action. He has to do the right thing. Like he goes against everything that Krypton kind of stands for.
Yeah.
Like, in almost all the movies, you know.
Yeah. And it's that sort of, that's kind of get up and go, that proactive spirit. Which makes him sort of, you know, such a good influence on who will be Superman.
Alien just got stabbed by an icicle there.
Yeah.
Pretty violent.
And that's pretty brutal. I mean, just yanks the tentacle.
Yeah, there's a tentacle stuck in Jor-El's chest. He's just like yanking the remnants off.
There's that big tooth as well.
Cool little fact about Jor-El. He is voiced by Happy Gilmore's Shooter McGavin.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so if you've seen Happy Gilmore, the villain in Happy Gilmore, who eats pieces of shit like you for breakfast, then this is the guy, and he obviously the opposite to the characters playing in that.
Another fun fact, he also plays the Superman Beyond in the Justice League episode.
Oh, really?
Where Batman Beyond sort of joins the Beyond, the future Justice League kind of thing.
Justice League of the future.
Yes,
as
exactly.
We would have known it in the UK.
Yeah, exactly.
So now this is one I'd like to talk to you about.
Yes.
So from from this is my first introduction to Brainiac, really.
Yeah.
And as we can see, Brainiac is a Krypton kind of artificial intelligence.
Yes.
Run Krypton, manages Krypton, all that sort of stuff. But in the comics, he wasn't from Krypton, was he?
No, not at all. No, it's very. They do take a big liberty from the comics, because in the comics, he's from the planet Kolu.
Yeah.
But I really like the fact that they sort of intrinsically tied Brainiac to Krypton, because, like, obviously, the whole thing with Krypton, and again, it's built on in Man of Steel, the fact that they've got all this technology, but they become over reliant on it. Like all their other resources, they become over reliant on it. So they let Brainiac do all their thinking for them. And we'll see in the sort of council chambers later.
I mean, his name is Brainiac, so you would yeah. want somebody like that to do your thinking, I think. I also like that they keep Lara. So we've got Lara. She's Lara L, I guess.
Lara Lorvan.
Lorvan, sorry.
It's all right.
See, that's when I say I've got holes in my comic book knowledge. I should be ashamed of myself.
Not at all. But I really love the fact that she's got the little S curl that Cal will one day inherit.
Yes, she does. And he looks, because in when he's Clark Kent, Superman's Clark Kent, he has his hair, it's totally slicked back, isn't
it? Yeah, it's pretty much the exact same character model, isn't it?
Very similar to Dean Cain.
Yeah, very much so.
So it was like, so he was kind of rough and ready, wasn't he? He was rough and ready as Clark, but then he slipped back as
Yeah, it's almost the opposite way, because I remember he had the spit curl when he was Clark Kent, but he slicked it back for... I prefer it, like in the DCEU films as well, I don't like it as much how when you Superman his hair's slicked back, I kind of liked it a little bit more tussled, like in Man of Steel.
Yeah, but... I think, well, if you're flying through, you know, the sky as fast as Superman does, it would get a little, you know, out of place.
Little crypto sort of cameo there.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't see any more Krypto after this.
it's a shame.
Well, we see a bit of Krypton here and there, I think, in the series. And there's a great episode, probably one of the better Superman episodes that wasn't in this series. Oh, gosh. Oh, Clark almost, Kal-El almost bought him there.
Yeah.
The statue almost fell on him.
I love the architecture on Krypton, how they've got these sort of impossible, sort of almost kind of 50s sci-fi paperback kind of inspired.
It's almost like Forbidden Planet or something like that.
Yeah, very much so.
I like that. I do like that.
Also, I like the fact that he said to his father-in-law, his father-in-law said to Jor-El, you have an ego the size of Argos, which I think would play very differently in the UK to the rest of the world.
That's in fact the sister planet, isn't it, to Krypton?
Yes, that's right. Because I remember Argo City is where Supergirl's from.
That's right. She turns up later. I think he's investigating the remnants of Krypton. He finds that Argo went through a similar crises. But in the Supergirl movie, I love these outfits as well. Giant.
These really absurd kind of, and again, it's that sort of like the pomp and the grandeur of the Kryptonian sort of dress. And also, speaking of Kryptonian outfits, did you notice that, like, Jor-El and Lara's outfits, they have kind of like almost a Roman sort of feel?
Yeah, like Centurion.
And it just gives us that sort of, like, that idea of a civilization that's about to collapse under the weight of its own excess, you know? Yeah. And I was rewatching these episodes last night, and that's something that really came to me.
No, I think you're exactly right there.
Also, the sort of undersuit, he's got this red robe, but the undersuit it's that exact suit with sort of like the silver panels on the arms and legs that is the Superman Beyond suit.
No, you're right.
Yeah.
That's what's so great about the team and the everything. The continuity, like, you don't get this in animated series a lot, like continuity bleeding through to other shows. It's very rare that even happens, but because it's the same creators.
Yes.
And they have absolutely, so, you know, every episode of Justice League as a callback to Superman the Animated Series.
Yeah.
You know, not everything calls back to Batman in those kind of Justice League shows. There's more callbacks to Superman.
Yeah.
Popularly. Like the characters like Green Lantern, Aquaman, all those kind of characters were introduced in this show.
Yeah, yeah. And again,
that's for me, that's the system. If you don't see Superman, then you don't really need, you shouldn't really watch Justice League. I think you can, and it's acceptable and it's great and it's very good. But I think it richens the experience for you to see those connections.
Yeah. And in terms of like the stylistically and the visuals, this is kind of like a midway point between the two, because when you get into Justice League, they're doing a lot more sort of digitally. But in the Batman animated series, it's much darker, because obviously it's all drawn on black paper, and the character models are a little bit thicker. a little bit wider, whereas here everything's a little bit more straight. They've still got the big square heads, but everything's a little bit more streamlined, a little bit sleeker.
I do like Bruce Timm's style. I always have.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
As well. Very Jack Kirby inspired, and he loves Jack Kirby, and you can tell, especially in this series, where they introduce the new gods and
Darkseid
and everything, and they kind of build up to Darkseid. They don't kind of drop it on you straight away. They don't, you know, don't make a thing of it. It's a slow build, much like the original New Gods comic. So there's not, Darkseid wasn't just like, it's Darkseid. It was, again, it was a slow build to his introduction.
Yeah, Darkseid kind of comes out of nowhere in those comics. I've been rereading them recently, but we digress. Mm. I love the sort of like the purple reddish sky and the, you know, it's kind of like generic science fiction, the kind of aesthetic, but I'm kind of okay with it because you're only going to visit Krypton for one, like
exactly,
literally one episode. So I can see why they didn't do massive amounts of sort of research and development. But in terms of, for what it is, I think it is perfectly serviceable.
Yeah. I'd love to talk about, is it Corey Burton who plays Brainiac?
Yes, it is. Yeah, Corey Burton.
Can I speak about, can we talk about his voice?
Yes, please do. Yeah.
This, and like, as actors, we've done lots of parts, we've played lots of different things, and you know, I don't think I ever played a robot myself or a machine or a
which I
would love to, but I never really got the chance. But it's really hard to sell emotion when you're an emotionless robot.
Yeah,
and Corey Burton sells all these kind of emotions, these feelings, while still sounding very detached and very cold at the same time, which is a hell of a thing to do.
He's got a very sort of imperious quality to his voice, doesn't he? Which I really like.
Superior, that kind of the superior, and he is the superior intellect, isn't he?
So. Yeah, I think he said that he based it on Hal from 2001, his sort of vocal performance, and
great.
You can definitely see some connective tissue there.
Now you've said it. I never thought about it before, but now you said it, I'm like, yes, of course.
But it is also kind of like he sounds polite and pleasant, like software we're used to dealing with sounds
like Siri.
It sounds polite.
Siri
and
trying to destroy us all.
Yeah, but it doesn't care. It doesn't care about you one way or the other.
So like in some iterations, what we're seeing now is Brainiac's downloading himself to a satellite, so he can survive the destruction of Krypton, because he hid the findings, or no, he's disagreed with Jor-El, didn't he?
That's right, yeah.
Well, Brainiac knows all, so...
He's disproved him in front of the... Well, yeah, he's...
undermined his theory.
Yeah, undermined him in front of the council.
Yeah,
but
so they've gone, yeah.
Also, one thing I noticed rewatching this, he's sort of like downloading and storing all of the Kryptonian data.
That's right,
which kind of makes him almost the eradicator of this version of the DC universe.
Yeah.
Again, something that just sort of came to me.
No, you're right.
I love the fact that as he's downloading the information, all the little lit panels in the walls start
going black. Yeah.
It's just a cool little touch.
You know, that's because that's Krypton dying, really, effectively, and it's going black. But that's the thing I think that tears at Kal-El later on, or Clark later on, because he can't destroy the last, remaining things to do with his home world. Like, it's a part of him to destroy Brainiac, to destroy a part of yourself.
Yes.
And your heritage and the legacy that was left behind, which is tricky, but he manages to do it, I believe. But not in this episode. I think it's Brainiac later. We're seeing a kick-ass Jor-El again.
Yeah, I like kick-ass Jor-El. I mean, like one thing that, like, as much as I liked the Marlon Brando version, he was kind of just sort of wandering around at a leisurely pace, reading his lines off of bits of scenery as we go along. But...
Being paid obscene amount of money for it as
well. Yeah, especially especially like in 1978, you know, by those standards.
Crazy, crazy.
But it's nice to see Jor-El sort of as the man of action, and also like being this fighting a little bit smarter than the people he's fighting against.
We're starting to see where he gets it from.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now in the John Byrne, when they in the 80s, where they had to reboot Superman and kind of depower him and kind of make him more modern.
Yeah.
The Krypton was very cold and very kind of placid, and it's more scientific, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There wasn't much heart or humor there.
Well, I think that's part of where the sort of no natural births bit comes from. The sort of the birthing
Man
matrix.
Of Steel. Yeah, for Man of Steel as well. That's the way they do it in Man of Steel. They're like, we clone and we create and we craft, and you fit in your place in society. We designed you for that.
You're imprinted with this is what you do.
You are an artist. You are a soldier. You are a And so when in Man of Steel, when they break out of that, and Jor-El's like, no, we're gonna have a natural birth. He's gonna be what he wants to be. Which I think is quite interesting, but I'm glad they didn't go with there's a birthing matrix, isn't there?
So he's not actually born in the John Byrne.
No,
and I think you lose something when you. I think it's a clever idea, but I do think you lose something. You lose that moment, which I think is done brilliantly here. That moment of sort of sacrifice.
Yeah.
Because rewatching this, I welled up a little bit. Yeah. I forgot how emotional it is.
It's heartbreaking. It's absolutely heartbreaking. And again, it's that classic story of Moses, isn't it? Transferred into a science fiction thing.
It's a tiny little thing, but I remember as a kid, sort of in these shows, you see the characters bleed, and when you're like 10, 12 years old, how old would I have been? 96, 14. Yeah. When you're a kid, you're not used to seeing blood in these things, you know, and it's.
And like Batman was known for showing actual gunfire.
Yeah, yeah.
Proper guns, bullets and everything. And like Spider-Man couldn't do that. X-Men couldn't do that. I don't know why Batman got a pass on these things. Oh, just go to sleep.
I really like that little sort of go to sleep device.
God, cool. I need one of those. Jesus, that'd be brilliant.
Oh, I don't know if you can use it on yourself. One thing about Lara's hair, she's got this little metal thing at the bottom, and I just keep thinking, how does that work? Like, how is there a metal thing on the bottom? Is it clipped into her hair? Is it holding her hair? Is her hair that thick that it can support a little round bowl?
I can't remember the character's name, but I do like the father-in-law, the actor who plays the father-in-law. I think his name's... I don't want to say... It's not Tony Todd, because that's another guy, but I think it's Todd something or something Todd. But he has a really booming, expressive voice. He's done a lot of these animated series and stuff. I think he was Baron Mordo in Spider-Man.
Oh, really?
He was Chairface Chippendale in The Tit.
Oh, nice.
I've got a big love for kind of voice actors. I went to Florida for this convention, and all the people I wanted to see were just the voice actors.
Yeah.
I met Phil Lamar and I met David Hayter. It was amazing, really, really. And they're really lovely and really cool. And everything was priced a bit more evenly. Val Kilmer's, you know, autograph was £80, or $100 or whatever the exchange rate is. I was a bit like, I'm not fussed.
Yeah.
But these guys were so cool. And I said to Phil Lamar, you are the greatest Green Lantern of all. Forget Hal Jordan. Forget Hal Jordan. It's all about John Stewart. And
isn't he also in Futurama?
He is. He's Hermes.
Yeah, I thought so.
And he's a lot of other characters. He's Robbie Robertson in The Spectacular Spider-Man. He's Gambit in Wolverine and the X-Men. He's got a good career, and he's got a talent. He's Static Shock as well, if you ever saw that. He played Static.
Which, again, is sort of tangentially connected to the DC animated universe.
There's another one as well. Isn't there like a robot one that's linked to Batman Beyond as well? I can't remember what it was called, because there's an episode with a robot who can just... like a robot assassin. And they made a show about that, apparently.
I can't remember. Yeah. I thought Static Shock turned into Batman Beyond, but I could be wrong.
It does. Yeah, partly. Okay, so heartbreaking.
I like the little box that she puts in with him. That's kind of like the codex, I guess.
It's just the holograph. The hologram kind of
orientation.
You're not from around here.
The superhero onboarding package. Yeah. Everything you need to know.
That's lovely, that moment there where Jor-El says there's still time. You can get in the ship. There's room. There's, you know, you can do it. And she goes, no, I'm staying here with you.
Again, it's the same sort of, it's covers similar ground in Man of Steel, how they talk about sort of, even if we could, we wouldn't have wanted to, because, you know, we created this fate because of the mistakes we made as a society. So we sort of deserve we got what we deserve. Which I think, I don't know if I could do that, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Given that our planet is probably going to explode in the next few years, the way we...
One way or another.
It, yeah. I mean, we just had the hottest sort of day in February ever in recorded history. So, climate change is real, folks, no matter what Donald Trump says. I like the fact that they're in this little tube as well while the rocket takes off. I don't know why, but it's
it
must, just something.
Is it shielding?
Like, yes, I think it is.
Yeah, because that would be bloody hot.
Yeah, the radiation coming from
it. Yeah, it's radiation fire coming out of that. What do you think of the design to the rocket in this?
I like it. Again, it's very sort of 50s, like almost sort of retro sci-fi, but the whole thing, like going back to that little kiss there while the planet explodes, it is heartbreaking.
It's awful.
I know, again, I just love this little pan around all the sort of like the various sort of locales, and just there they go. They're all up in, not flames, but...
It's all falling into itself. There goes a big statue, a big monolith. There goes the computer data system. Oh, bloody hell.
Everything.
He died quite violently. Like,
yeah.
That was also surprised me about the DCAU as well. His hat was all green.
Yeah.
Sign of the Kryptonite.
Yeah, that's something that's not really been done elsewhere, and I really appreciate that.
No, I think that's good. I think you've got to show that it's kind of irradiated. It's got a planet now. It's covered in green radiation.
Yeah,
brilliant. I love that. And you can it's throwing its chunks into space. I think this one follows in now. I think it follows in.
Yeah,
it follows in.
And oh, that's right, because it opens up a wormhole, doesn't it? And
that's right. Yeah,
and all this Kryptonite is going to start this little hail of Kryptonite. Tonight that's coming now.
Spreads through the earth and stuff.
Going back to the retro thing, hit me like why we have this sort of retro sci-fi aesthetic, because retro aesthetics are built into the, you know, they're baked into the crust of
Kryptonite coming.
Yeah, they're baked into the crust of the sort of DC animated thing. Like going back to Batman, the sort of art deco, sort of timeless, but also kind of very much 40s, 50s kind of aesthetic.
Yeah.
So it's easy to see where it comes
from. To be continued. So.
Yeah. And that's the end of the episode.
Yeah.
It's succinct.
Da-na-na.
Also, you've kind of got to admire the balls of this episode.
To not have Superman.
Yeah. Your first episode is just Krypton.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's really cool.
I do remember that they put this together as an animated movie. They kind of tied all the episodes together and released it in the UK. I don't know if they released it in the US.
They did the same with the Batman crossover, The World's Finest.
Does this do iTunes roll into the next episode? I believe they do, don't
it?
They?
Doesn't, no.
Oh,
it just dies.
Okay, so we're gonna have a little pause. So we're gonna get the next episode queued up very shortly.
We'll queue it up. But in the meantime, what overall, because I saw that last night, but it's been a while since you've seen it.
It has been a while since I've seen it. Yeah, I love it. I think it's a great introduction to Krypton, his past, Superman's past and everything. I think it's one of my favorite iterations of Krypton and the story of Krypton's explosion.
Awesome.
I love the characters. I think it's nice to have the council in there. It's nice to have, you know, another relative, like, because it does seem like in most iterations that it's just those two. But I like to see, you know, Jor-El doing stuff as well. Excellent. I think let's get cracking on with the next one.
Absolutely. So once again, we're looking at a black screen. We've pulled up the next episode onto iTunes. So now we are at 0000 and we're going to start the counter going in 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, here we are again. So Bugs is back.
Bugs is back. He's just taken a bite. So we'll just keep yammering on
about
through the theme credits.
Yeah. So can we talk about the theme?
Yeah. That, again, another one by Shirley Walker, who obviously she extrapolated a lot of the Batman the Animated Series music from the Tim Burton film. Mm. But in this, they're going with something completely different. And at first I was like, well, why don't you use the Richard Donner version? That's clearly like the definitive version. But the more times pass, the more I really appreciate this version.
I think it's a great theme. It harkens to that sense of the John Williams version.
Yeah.
But it's still like, it's similar. Yeah, it's Superman. But it's something new. It's something different.
It has that soaring quality to it. Yeah.
It has that proud kind of, I'm standing up for what I believe in. You know, this is who I am. You deal with it. I'm going to do the right thing no matter what, because that is what I do.
Yeah.
There we go. Then it's gone. It's come and gone. That's how good it was. So we get a little recap of the last episode, don't we?
Yeah. And just a little bit of returning to Krypton, this sort of like retro design, the absurd council members' costumes with the pointy shoulders.
It always drives me nuts in films where there's always some detractor. It's like, this will never happen. This will never explode. Or, that can't be an alien. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
But why did you lie? That's such an interesting line for a machine.
Yeah.
Like, why did you lie? Because that's a very human thing to do.
Yeah.
So that's why I find Brainiac one of the more interesting and unique villains. I'm still surprised that they still haven't done a live action version of Brainiac for a movie. I know they did one for Krypton.
Yeah, that's been the only time we've seen a live action. But I'm as astonished as you are.
Yeah. I just don't get it. I mean, you know, I get Zod. I get Zod. I'm interested in Zod. I like Zod, but Brainiac would be the go-to one for me.
Yeah, and thing is, there's only so many times you can do the alien invader thing without it getting stale.
Oh,
so,
God, yeah.
I think the way you make Brainiac work is what they did in the Grant Morrison run, which is Brainiac has always, like, he's been here for quite some time.
Oh, really?
Sort of biding his time.
I still need to finish that. I started it, but I didn't. I think I've read the first issue.
The sort of New 52 run on Action Comics.
Where he wears
really
the t-shirt.
Yeah, Blue Jean Superman. I really like it.
We're seeing little Kal-El, baby Kal-El. Also the name of Nicolas Cage's son.
Yes, so I heard, yeah. And Henry Cavill's dog is also called Cal.
Really?
Yeah. Fun
Here
fact.
Here we go. So I love the Kents. I don't know about you, but
no,
I
absolutely.
Love the
Kents. Like, as someone who grew up sort of watching this and the Lois and Clark series, I love the fact that he'd always come. You just have Superman sort of sipping a cup of coffee in this sort of, like, you know, Midwestern family kitchen. That always sort of appealed to me.
I love that he always went to them for advice no matter what. No matter what he was dealing with, be it Metallo or, you know, his insecurities about revealing his secret identity to Lois Lane, he would always go back to mom and dad. And that's a very human thing to do, I think.
Yeah, and it's something that I think something that really differentiates Superman from Batman. And a lot of, for some reason, in recent years, a lot of creators have tried to sort of pull away from that. We've had the Kents killed off over and over again.
I don't like it.
Or at least Jonathan Kent killed off over and over again. And I think you lose something in that. I think you do lose that sort of wholesome, because Superman doesn't need, his entire planet exploded.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't need another layer of tragedy on top of that.
Exactly,
like,
right.
Superman's not who you go to for
and
tragedy.
And this is a kind of a love letter to adoptive parents as well.
Yes,
like,
absolutely.
There's a lot of amazing parents out there that do not have children. You know, they're not born from, you know, their loins, what have you. You know,
good use of the word loins.
Yeah. You know, they've not come from that. And they are some of the best parents in the world because that is who they are, and they want that child so much and they love those children. And you don't have to be, you know, blood related to love a child in any form. And that's, I think this is a really nice spotlight. So every time I see Superman, I'm very sad if I see one of the Kents dead.
Yeah.
As good as some of the stories are, like, I think Superman Brainiac is a really good one with Jeff Johns, Gary Frank.
Oh, yes.
It's a really good story. And there's even an animated movie about that, actually, Superman Unbound.
Yes, which is massively
very, very
underrated.
And I think we will definitely look at that in the future.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I'm always a bit gutted if one of them's dead, to be honest.
I also like the fact that she mentions Christopher and Kirk as possible suggestions for Clark's name, which are obviously Christopher Reeve and Kirk Allen, who have both played Superman in live action.
Oh, wow. Yes. Yeah. I just thought, I don't know, I was just thinking like Captain Kirk, I think.
Oh, right. Okay.
You know? So we get to see a bit of teenage Clark, a bit of Smallville.
Yeah, yeah. And a bit of Lana Lang as well. And we don't get an awful lot of it, but I do like this relationship. Mm. And I'm not sure, but his voice sounds a little bit like Will Friedle, who was Terry McGinnis.
Yeah.
So I don't know if, in fact, I'll have to look that up.
Yeah.
I don't know if it is, but it does. It has that same sort of energy.
It does, that youthful kind of vigour to it. I really like the relationship. There's a later episode with Lana in where she's dating Lex Luthor.
Yeah, she's a
LL versus LL versus. No, LL was going out with LL. But yeah, that's a weird thing in Superman comics. There's a lot of LLs, isn't there?
Yes. I think, it's...
Even Laurie Lamaris, who was the mermaid that Superman went down with
I remember
for a while.
That, yeah.
That was that's one relationship they've not revisited in the last few years.
Just scrolling through IMDb, Malcolm McDowell is Metallo.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I had no idea. That's a good pull.
He's
isn't
actually,
it?
I think he's actually in this episode, isn't he? I think he makes his first appearance.
Yes, yes,
episode.
He does. Yeah, very much.
But yeah, I think someone once said to me that Superman is actually three people.
Yes,
he is Kal-El, son of Krypton. He is Clark Kent, son of Smallville. and he is Superman.
Yeah.
And I think that is absolutely spot on. And I think that you know, speaks to all of us as well. Like you hang out with different people, you spend time with your family, you are a different person.
Oh, big time, yeah.
You know, no matter who you spend your time with, and you're still the same person, you're just like a different iteration of that person.
Yeah.
And I feel like that, like when Clark goes home, he's very much at home, he's the farm kid, you know.
Yeah, I think that's my favourite version of Clark Kent, the sort of like in blue jeans and a sort of flannel shirt.
Yeah.
With his glasses off, just sort of like helping out around the farm.
He's throwing like a ball for crypto, and he's flying a million miles away to catch it.
Yeah, that's the real Clark, isn't it?
Yeah, and he doesn't even think there's been this huge, we've seen this huge explosion, huge crash in Smallville, and Clark's just thrown himself in the middle of it, and his powers are emerging.
Yeah,
I think they even made a joke about looking at the girls' locker room.
Yeah, we're just rambling through.
We were rambling through. That's quite a risque joke to put in, like this sort of stuff. I remember in the Justice League, there's one where the Flash says something like, "I'm the fastest man alive," and Hulk girl goes, "You know, maybe that's why you can't keep a girlfriend."
I'm sure there's one episode where the Question and Huntress are having phone sex. They're not having, like, there's an allusion to phone sex.
Mm.
But and like the fact that you've got teenage Clark throwing himself in these situations, he doesn't know. Like, a lot of people see Superman stories and go, "Oh well, yeah, well he's indestructible." Like, at this point, he doesn't know that. And what, there's a really good, I think it was Darwin Cook and Tim Sale, Superman Kryptonite, which is, it's like an early years Superman, and he doesn't know he's invincible. Like, he doesn't know what his limits are, and every time he throws himself into a deadly situation, he thinks this could be his last.
Will this kill me? Could this hurt?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think in a little bit in that book, he's kind of looking for it a little bit. There's almost a kind of morbid curiosity.
Yes.
About him saying, "Can I die?
Yeah.
Will I grow old? Will I?" You know, he doesn't know these things, and I think that's interesting. I know a lot of the time they can play him off as, a lot of people say, "Oh, he's the resident strong man, he's not as intelligent as Batman," but in a lot of stories he is very highly intelligent.
He's
you know, in Grant Morrison's All-Star Superman, he's like doing surgery on a son and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
you know, bizarre kind of things like that. But I personally, I like it when he doesn't have as, you know, as keen a sense, like there isn't I think there is a small bit of naivete to Superman which comes along with who he is and his kind of the hope he represents, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but again, like that's why Batman's there, because he goes, "You shouldn't be so naive."
Yeah.
But then he's like, "Well, you shouldn't be so bloody grim all the time." You know, it's kind of they're a good balance between each other.
I love in the little box that he's just picked up how the little squiggles sort of align themselves into the S shield. The only thing I think is a missed opportunity is we don't see that logo anywhere else on Krypton, so we don't have this idea of what it means like we do get in sort of in Superman Birthright, the Mark Waid book,
yeah,
or in Man of Steel,
Man of Steel, yeah.
And I just think that because. I love the idea of the symbol means something even before he's Superman, because he when he comes to Metropolis, he is in that suit pretty much straight away.
Yeah, no, you're right. Let him be, Martha. Let him be.
Yeah,
he's only being brainwashed. He's fine.
Yeah, let him hallucinate with the alien box.
I am a normal human being, so he knows all these things are happening to him. He is different.
Yeah,
but he's holding on to that humanity. He doesn't want to be. He doesn't want to be any more different than he already is.
And like that's what when people say, "Oh, Superman isn't relatable," like. Fair enough, we don't know what it's like to realize you're from another planet, but we do know what it's like to be growing up and to sort of like come into all these, like
be an outsider.
Yeah, but also to realize like you're stronger, you're physically growing.
That's a really tragic moment. He reaches out for his mother's hand and she's just a hologram.
Yeah. And for adopted kids, you know, this idea of
he's smashing the barn up, he's scaring his parents.
Yeah. And you
know, he's doing what a teenager does.
Exactly. But this idea of sort of realizing you're adopted and your worldview just sort of expands like that. Now, I love this sort of moment where he sort of loses control emotionally and without sort of realizing it, he's starting to fly.
Yeah.
And I also love that he doesn't.
You know what? I think this. I know it's clearly not the same, but I actually prefer this Smallville scene to the Christopher Reeves one.
Yeah.
Because there's a bit more to it, there's a bit more importance to it, there's a bit more story element to it. It's not just like, he's young and has powers.
There's a really nice moment like this in Superman Returns, which I think is which I would be happy to discuss on this podcast because I think it's a very underrated film.
You know what? I would like to see it again. I remember not enjoying it whatsoever.
Oh, really? Okay,
I just read Deadbeat Dad Superman didn't grab me back then.
There's more to it. I get the complaints about it, but there is a lot more to it than that.
Yeah.
But I love that sort of right revelation that he's flying and he does a little loop-de-loop. That's cool. Did you ever play the video game Superman Shadow of Apocalypse?
No, I didn't.
It was amazing, and it was based on the animated series.
But I heard there was another video game not so well received called Superman 64.
Oh yeah, I never played that.
Yeah,
I never owned an N64. I never saw the appeal of the N64.
But I'm glad I never played it because I've seen videos and it looks horrendous.
But no, Shadow of Apocalypse is nothing like that. It's excellent. It's really good.
I'm trying to remember, I did play a Superman game that my mum's boyfriend's very much like Superman and very interested in Superman. I can't remember what it was called though. I think it's Superman something. Man of Steel, maybe? I don't know.
Was it on the Xbox?
It may have been. Yeah. I think that was the one.
It was Man of Steel. Yeah.
That one I quite enjoyed because it was all the villains like Bizarro. You go into the Phantom Zone, Bizarro, all the elements of Superman alike. Here we are, the big city itself, Metropolis.
And I love the fact that sort of Angela Chen, who's a TV reporter, and you've got Lois Lane, and they're kind of catty with each other. And Lois Lane's the serious journalist, and she doesn't take television seriously.
Yeah, they didn't go with Cat Grant.
Which
is interesting. I don't know why, or Big Blue Angel. Well, that's basically what he is, I guess.
Yeah, I love that they're introducing Superman through the point of view of the people he saved straight away.
Through the eyes of a child.
Yeah, well, and also it's kind of like what they did in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man, how before we see Spider-Man...
All the talking heads.
Yeah, we get all the talking heads sort of discussing him as a phenomenon.
I think Dana Delaney is actually the longest-serving Lois Lane of all time.
She's incredible.
And like, she's so great.
When I read Superman comics, it's her voice that and she was in, like, I'd never seen her in real life until I saw Desperate Housewives.
She's in a lot. Like,
she works
hard and she's a very good actress. And I think in this, and she's kept it up. She's done it. She did it here. She did it in Justice League Unlimited, you know, all the way through. And she was a strong presence, and it's always nice to see her and hear her voice. She's even Andrea Beaumont. Mask of the Phantasm.
She has one of those voices. Especially in this episode, she talks very fast, like the thought is like a newspaper person.
Yeah.
It's like she does have a very sort of like boom 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 sort of rhythm to her voice, but also
a bit like Margot Lane from The Shadow.
Yeah, but there's also kind of a warmth there as well, and I think this is one of the first things where.
The great and benevolent Mr. Luthor.
Yeah, exactly. I think this is one of the first things where you see Lois Lane refer to Clark as Smallville.
Yeah,
and I quite like that sort of gentle teasing of you know, big.
That happens in Christopher Reeve's one, doesn't he? She calls him Smallville.
No, she doesn't.
I'm sure she does.
Does she?
I'm sure. I swear she calls him Smallville.
Okay,
I could be wrong. What do you think of the non-bumbling Clark Kent?
I think you can do. Both. Yeah. I think for me, sort of the best version of Clark Kent is he's not the sort of the doofus who's always like tripping over his feet or whatever. He's just the guy.
Jimmy Olsen's just done.
Yeah, he's just the guy you look past and
well-mannered.
Yeah, and there's that brilliant line where, Miss Lane uses me all the time, and he's like, yes, so I see, because he used him as a distraction while she...
The spelling of laboratories was wrong on that building. It said laboratories, L-A-E.
There was, it might be the fact that, and I swear to God, there's an episode of Batman the Animated Series where there's a boat pulling away and it says Auckland on it, but for a second it says Fuckland. I swear it's on there.
You talk about Angela Chen and Lois being catty.
Yes.
She just said, well, they don't usually send two reports to cover the same story.
I know.
And Clark has actually got there quicker.
Yeah.
How, Lois wonders, but of course we know.
I think that's kind of an homage as well to Superman the movie where... in Smallville, he sort of gets to where his friends are going in the car. And he's like, how do you get fast? Oh, I ran.
Yeah. And they're like, you're crazy. You're weird.
Yeah.
The Lexoskel. Look at this body armor. This exoskeleton.
And it's kind of like everything from sort of Robocop 2 to Iron Man 2, this idea of the big robot suits.
You know what? as much as I like the DCAU, they pull a lot of influence from Marvel Comics. They do, like there is you can see it. So for this looks like, for me, the Mandroid armor from Marvel Comics, which is basically a specific special ops team of S.H.I.E.L.D. And they have these big kind of armored suits that, you know, use against the Avengers or Iron Man. They're featured in the Iron Man Armor Wars, and they're also in the Kree-Skrull War, Avengers Kree-Skrull War.
Okay.
But the iteration of this is the way it looks here is the way it looks in the Armor Wars. But it does have that. But I guess all kind of armor suits are going to look a certain way. And here we have one of my favorite actors of all time, Clancy Brown.
Yeah, I mean, talk about definitive. This is the definitive Lex Luthor. Yes. And as much as I love what Jesse Eisenberg did with him in live action, I thought it was, you know, really interesting and original. We've still not seen this version of Lex on the big screen. It's so disappointing.
My two favorite versions of Lex for my money are this version and the Michael Rosenbaum Smallville version.
See, I never got into Smallville. I think I was just a bit too old for it.
I mean, I saw it here and there and I enjoyed it. I didn't watch it religiously, but he took the character seriously. There was no, you know, as much as I like the other Gene Hackman, I'm not a massive fan of the Jesse Eisenberg version. However, I can see what they were trying to do with it, but I'm not interested in the kind of, you know, used car salesman Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
You know, the jokey, you know, bumbling, over the top, quirky Lex Luthor. I'd rather have a serious, evil, jealous, you know, manipulative Lex Luthor that I've read in the comics. Sure, oh, there we go. Sure, we did get it.
I think that's the only one in the whole series.
Don't expect that to see that again. So somebody is stealing the Lex suit, the Lex Skell.
Yeah, the Lex Skell. That's terrible branding. Yeah. Guys. Come on.
Lex Skell.
And fuck it. They're just going to fly through the ceiling because why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, why not? When you got armor like that. Ooh. Lewis,
and I think this is another sort of imagined from another imagined country, but we'll get to that.
Yeah,
it's good. Superman's big rescue. There we go. Not quite. You've got me. Who's got you?
No,
but I like it.
Look at my crotch.
Look at my ass.
Look at my crotch shot.
I don't know why, but I always liked how Superman's trunks are sort of like, they're black, but they've got a red streak in the same way that sort of Batman's costume was black, but his cloak was black, but had a blue streak.
Yeah, I think it's a good, like, it's obviously the classic version of the design, like classic Superman look. You don't really mess with that, I don't think, too much. But yeah, no, I agree. I think that was a good choice. I did listen to the commentaries on some of these episodes a few years back. And like Bruce Timm and Paul Dini, they were talking about the way Superman looks. And they actually would write, surprisingly, they would write a lot of his episodes at night because he actually looked better at night.
Yeah.
The way the suit looks and everything, just the way the lighting, which is strange, obviously, with, you know, they had Batman the Animated Series almost entirely set at night, apart from the odd episode here and there. But, just push it.
That's fine.
I won't be saving you. See you later.
Shit. I hope they've got parachutes.
So Superman's just killed two guys. They've got parachutes, don't
they? There you go. I thought they were going to do that cop out where they they land in water and it's like, oh, well, they'll be fine, even though you'd definitely die if you fell that far and landed in water.
Oh, is this Malcolm McDowell?
This is Malcolm McDowell now, yeah.
He's dust.
Now, this is, I didn't know if you knew this, but they deliberately omitted the yellow S from the cape.
Okay.
Just because they didn't want to have to animate it whenever the cape sort of moved or rippled.
God, yeah, that would have been annoying.
Because that would throw the proportions off.
This is before the computer animation as well, so it's still being hand-drawn.
And when you look at...
Oh, crap.
Oh, good heavens. Now, I think this plane rescue, I think Superman Returns pulled a lot from this.
Oh, yeah, I think so too. That's it.
But we're not going to see it yet because it's the end of the episode.
Sorry, guys, the cliffhanger is da-na-na, da-na-na.
So, that episode covered a lot of ground.
That one
straight from sort of like first days in Smallville to
full on Superman, jumped a few years in front. But yeah, I think it's weird. It does cover a lot, but it didn't feel rushed or
not too much.
It was, you know, it set everything up. So like the last part is just the adventure, I guess. So it's the most kind of bombastic part, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm ever so slightly disappointed that they didn't do anything to establish sort of what the suit is, where it came from, why he wears it, why he's not. Because in the John Byrne sort of Man of Steel, like post-crisis relaunch in the 80s, at first he's rescuing people and he's just wearing like a brown leather jacket and jeans.
And they're looking at it, and then because he's not wearing a mask, is he?
He's not, no.
But then doesn't he vibrate at a certain rate so he can't be... I think
that's something they did later.
Oh, okay.
I could be wrong.
Not in that. Okay, that's cool. But I remember in the John Byrne thing that the Kents create the suit, don't they?
Yes.
They create it just, and I like that element. A lot of people are, you know, the Kryptonian armor or a Kryptonian suit. But I quite like that kind of that they have a part to play.
Yeah.
In him becoming Superman. They give him the glasses and everything like
yeah.
that. Yeah. To do this and do that with his hair. I like that they've got they have a vested interest. It's that he's their son, you know, and they don't want him to go off and die. And he had a personal force field, if I remember, that would cover his entire body in the John Byrne.
That's right, yeah.
And that's why the suit wouldn't get tarnished or ruined.
Apparently we all have that. We all have a little sort of bioelectrical aura. Because otherwise, like, just dirt and shit would stick to us and dust would stick to us all the time.
Oh my God, that sounds awful.
It keeps
magnet for filth.
Yeah, it just keeps stuff off us, apparently.
Cool. Well, should we crack on with the last one then?
Yeah, let's crack on with the last episode. So we're
back again to 000.
I'll bring it up and I'll just press pause. Okay, so we're back on a black screen. We're at 0000 and we're going to press play in 3, 2, 1 and we're rolling. So part 3 of 3.
Yes, so this is it.
Bugs has just taken his bite and we're back into the credits.
And back to the... So let's see what kind of... Let's talk about what kind of images they use in the intro as well. Like,
I mean, it's everything you need. You've got Krypton blows up, Kent's picking him up, Smallville for Superman. A second, and then boom, Superman.
Yeah, this is Superman.
And there's even the bit where he's sort of like the Neil Adams style. He's shrugging off the chain, the wrap around him.
Yeah, he's holding the flames there, pushing the flames. He's carrying Lois, classic. Lois is saving him.
Got a little bit of Jimmy, a little bit of... I love, like, one thing that you don't get as much of in Superman media these days is Clark Kent crusading reporter.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I think BVS did really well, this idea of he's trying to sort of campaign for social justice, and even though social justice warrior has become sort of...
Yeah, a negative.
Which I have my own opinions about. But, yeah, and... Just Clancy Brown's Lex Luthor, that's just amazing. And I love that we'll see it later, but just this idea of him sort of like hovering outside the window judging Lex Luthor.
We're getting another recap of the last episode.
Yeah, and again, it just reminds you how much ground the last episode. Like, what all these series are amazing at telling a lot of story in little 20-minute increments.
Yeah.
It's so impressive.
And I've gone hours just watching them without realizing. That I've watched, you know, 3 hours of them, like,
yeah,
9 episodes have gone by, and I've gone, oh God, I need to do something with my life.
on the other side of it, I've been rewatching a lot of sort of, I've been going through my Blu-ray box set of Batman animated series, and just I will watch one episode of that, and I will be completely sort of satisfied, like, I'll be completely satiated. It's because they just do a lot with a very short space of time.
So we're back now with the falling plane that Superman has inadvertently caused.
Yeah, and I love that as well. Like, people assume that, oh, if you've got Superman's powers, then...
Perfect.
Yeah, you don't need to worry about anything, but, like, you've still got to worry about the physics of how the fuck do you bring down...
This is one of my favourite moments here. He's trying to pull the plane.
And oof.
Physics.
Off comes the tail fin.
Nice one, Clark. Well done, dickhead. This is a great shot here. Zoom, right towards the camera.
And he gets under it, doesn't he? Yeah. And again, this is, I think, Superman Returns does exactly this. So he tries and push against the nose cone and try and slow it.
Yeah, I think he might pull on the wing. I think the other wing comes off.
Yes, that's right.
I think that's how he does it. But yeah, when I saw Superman Returns, I was like, yeah, this is, you know. But it is kind of a classic thing. He's either saving, I think that's usually his first adventure. Usually he's saving a space shuttle.
Yeah.
Or he's saving a plane or something like that. It's like something nobody could do. No human being could do.
Again, going back to the John Byrne thing, I think that was what his sort of... debut was
okay,
and it would have been nice in, like, as much as I love Man of Steel, which is a lot, it would have been nice if we got something like that before we get to the Battle of Krypton. But I think the whole point
I love that he's not trying to stop it, he's trying to move it and divert it away, because he's not going to be able to stop it where he is, but he's at least kind of trying to get it somewhere safe. And I prefer that than them, you know, physically stopping it.
Yeah. And it's an effort for him as well. It's like, yeah. that's one thing I think this show got his power level just right. Yes. So he's the most powerful character in this universe, but at the same time he still has limitations. He's not sort of Silver Age omnipotent Superman who can blow out a star.
And even high caliber bullets hurt him.
Yeah,
it's not. It's like a Luke Cage thing. It's not like he's like, oh, I'm shrugging all this off.
We'll see it in a bit. Yeah. Well, they knock him down. And one thing that the Superman Returns game did really well actually is like. Bullets don't hurt you because you don't have an energy bar, but they knock you back, and Metropolis has an energy bar, they stop you from being able to sort of protect Metropolis.
That's quite an interesting concept for a game. The city has a health bar.
I think that's the way you've got to do it. Yeah, definitely. Like, things can incapacitate you, but
Oh, the video. Here we go. Video recording.
That's incredibly good amateur video.
Yeah, that's the best fan footage film I've ever seen. Looks like a flying guy.
do you like sort of when Superman sort of gracefully taking off, or do you prefer it when he's sort of like pachoom, where he's like a bullet?
I don't know. I think depending on the situation, think, you know, if he does. I do like a bit of weight to him, a bit of like the feel that like he's almost having to make the effort to get to get up there. You know, like Stan Lee always said that, you know, he didn't really like the way Superman flew. So when he created Thor, he was like, Thor can't fly.
Yeah.
But he whirls his hammer around, throws the hammer, holds onto it, and that is the flying.
Meow meow does the flying.
Yeah. So
we've just seen Lois Lane giving Superman his name, and she actually does refer back to Nietzsche. Which is, and it's great that you've got a show aimed at kids that discusses Nietzsche,
the Übermensch.
Well,
that was the whole initial idea of Joe Siegel and Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster.
Yeah,
was that it was this evil Übermensch, wasn't it? A bald evil Superman, and then they repurposed that idea into this.
Yeah. And Laz, we were just saying, we get this first moment of going back to sort of touch base with the parents to sort of, you know, discuss the quandaries that come with, well, my identity's out there now.
Yeah. What do I do? How do I do?
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is what I love. This is why I love the Kents, is because they're always there. They're like we say, obviously, biological parents are his biological parents. They always will be.
Mm-hmm.
But these are his real parents in so many ways. They're his touchstone. They're his humanity. So like in Kingdom Come, where he loses them, he loses Lois, he loses everybody at the planet, and that's his link to humanity. Those are the people he knows best. And then he's like, well, I'm just going to isolate myself because I've got no stake in this anymore. I've got no stake in this planet, which is, you know, obviously not true. And he does come back, but I can understand why. Oh yeah, I love this.
Yeah. And I also love the fact that his mum says sort of like that. I mean, we had some brilliant lines in that scene. Yeah. I love the fact that like Clark Kent is who you are. Superman just helps out a little. That's the opposite of Batman. You know, I love that.
He is Clark Kent. He's not, that's Superman is the persona, but yeah, you're right. It's the other way for Batman.
But I love the fact that his mom said, you know, talk to the press, get them on your side, help them get to know you a bit, because like that's why he doesn't wear a mask. He wants people to trust him. He wants to be as transparent as possible.
Because, you know, if an alien flew down from outer space, would you trust them?
Exactly.
The way? Would you understand them? Would you be a bit suspect? You know, this is a good package. This is like the perfect package, and it's almost too good to be true. It's a guy who just doesn't lie. He, you know, he's honest. He, you know, he's helping out for no selfish reasons at all. Would you trust that?
Yeah.
In this day and age, you wouldn't.
I think we would if he charged us. I think if we got
there's a subscription fee.
But do you know what I mean? Yeah. That's the world we live in now. If we're paying for it, then fair enough.
That's why Luke Cage works very well, because he just charges for his services. Oh, we got Lex Luthor having a lovely massage with loads of other people in the room. It's very unusual, but he runs the world.
And didn't they? Is this where they bring up the fact that he and Lois used to go out?
Mm.
And I really like that. And that was one of my favorite things in Lois and Clark as well.
Dick is clearly out here. Like that tiny, his dick is hanging out.
Yeah. But also he's like, look at my man muscles.
Yeah. By the way, I work out. I am the, that's Lex in a, you know, he is the Übermensch.
I've always liked buff Lex.
Yeah. Well, he's like, I'm the pinnacle of brains. I'm the pinnacle of human perfection. And then Superman comes along and I hate that because he has all these gifts that I don't have. It is an interesting thought.
Yeah.
When this came out, obviously the skin tones are very different on all the characters.
Yeah.
So when this came out, a lot of fans thought that Lex Luthor might be an African-American.
Yeah, from what I gather, I think this version of Lex is modelled on Telly Savalas.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Because the big lips, the big nose, the defined eyebrows.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
But you could, if you wanted to read it that way, you certainly could.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't think anybody, I think the creators were not aiming for that necessarily, but they weren't against it. They were like, if you want to see Lex Luthor as an African-American, that's cool.
It's like Harvey Dent in the Batman series.
Exactly.
Like he could be, because I think Billy Dee was still Harvey Dent at that point. Like, he could be black, he could be Hispanic, he's sort of ambiguous.
And, you know, and unfortunately, today, if someone did that in an animated series, there might be, well, if it was as high kind of exposure as most of these films are, that some horrible group of people will probably kick off and go,
let's not, venomous people. You need only look at what's going on with Captain Marvel at the minute to realize how shit people are.
People are a bit shit on the internet. Is it Kazakhstan? Not
Kaznia.
Kaznia. Yeah. Right, I was going to say Kazakhstan.
I love that as well. It's like Nairobi.
Yeah.
You make up countries because you don't want to alienate anywhere where you might want to export your...
Here's a very little used character.
Bibbo.
Which I really like. Bibbo.
I love Bibbo.
Is it Bibbo Bibowski?
Bibbo Bibowski, yeah.
I love him. He's he's a big Superman fan. He's a good guy. But he's quite... I really enjoy... simple, honest, good characters like Happy Hogan is very similar to Bibbo Bobrowski, and in Iron Man, he was a boxer, he was a relatively down to earth guy. He's not super smart like Tony Stark, but he's still a good man, and you know, I like characters like that. Even some of the villains like Sandman, from Spider-Man, I really love, and you know,
kind of salt of the earth, down on their luck,
exactly.
Kind of people.
Yeah, they're just dealing with it day to day, but they're trying to do the best they can, and they're inspired by people like Spider-Man or Superman or, you know, however. But he's a really underused character in the rest. They did have him in Reign of the Superman recently, which I really enjoyed.
I love that his bar is in Hobbs Bay, which is basically like Metropolis's equivalent of Crime Alley.
Is it Ace of Clubs, the bar, I think it's called?
Yes, that's right, yeah. They call it Suicide Slum.
Suicide Slum, yeah. I really like Suicide Slum as well. That's a really underused... I like the whole... have you ever read... the Lex Luthor autobiography comic.
Yeah, by Lee Bermejo and Brian Azzarello. Yeah, yeah.
No. There's another one. There's an earlier one.
Oh.
And it's about a down-on-his-up reporter that kind of decides to do the autobiography of Lex Luthor. He starts looking into his past and he starts finding out where he's from. So he finds out he's from Suicide Slum originally.
Oh.
And I've got the comic if you want to borrow it.
Yes, definitely.
And basically he starts interviewing people that Lex knew throughout his life, and then Lex gets wind of this and kind of tries to shut the autobiography down.
I love it.
I'll lend you that. I think you'd really enjoy it.
I really like this scene where Lois is using a combination of charm and audacity to sort of like, and that to me is Lois Lane. Like she's not acerbic. She doesn't piss people off, but in all the right ways.
I love how cheeky she is. Like, you don't get anywhere in life if you're not a little bit cheeky. And she is quite cheeky.
And I love how John Corbin's trying to sort of charm her and failing miserably.
Exactly, yeah. Because he's a horrible, horrible creep. But we see a little more of John Corbin later on in the series. So what's the plot of this? I do forget a little bit. It's something about Kaznia and...
Okay, so they basically are trying to steal Lex's... Oh, I can't even remember. They're trying to steal Lex's boot for reasons. That's all you need to know, really.
I think, isn't it something like there's a civil war going on or something, maybe?
Yeah.
Use.
Oh, that's it. They want him... Lex Luthor arranges with them for the suit to get stolen... so that he can get commissioned by the government to build more...
Right, to fight the Kaznians.
Yeah.
Right, I see. Cool. So they, like, reverse engineer it. Supposedly reverse engineer it.
Yeah, it's one of those everybody
wins. Jumping out the window.
As you do.
Hey, where'd you go, Clark? Just jumping out the window. I love when, like, Clark falls out the window and, like, oh, yeah, Superman caught me. Yes, I'm fine.
Yeah.
You're making a big mistake. Yeah, this is pretty big. If... if you're kidnapping Lois Lane, you should be get used to having Superman come along and fight you.
There's an episode later on where I think it's the Batman Superman crossover where like Lois Lane's on a plane that gets hijacked and they say, "What's your name?" And it says Lois Lane. She's like, "The one Superman always saves." We've kidnapped Lois Lane. Oh no!
And is that a guy? Doesn't he? Superman rips open the. Oh yeah, he's bulletproof, guys. He's bulletproof.
That's so cool as well. That's a really good and I love anything.
Do you take
where...
it for granted the bulletproof?
Yeah,
like, it would be quite shocking to actually see that in real life, and that's quite scary as well.
Yeah, the glowing eyes.
Demonic.
If you don't know,
yeah,
that's the one thing that I don't very little I don't like about this design, but I wish they'd shown him having blue eyes because his eyes look kind of beady.
Yeah,
which I could do with
I like that. Like,
that's one of my I love that he grabs the bullets and throws them back. That's one of my favorite things ever.
Oh, look, and all that stuff has knocked him off his feet.
Yeah,
bowled him over. That's some heavy gear right there.
It's physics. No matter how tough you are, things can still knock you over.
I really like that. Oh, we got Corbin getting into the suit. Shades of Metallo.
Yeah, I think there's some sort of like, I think he gets electrocuted while he's in the suit.
Yeah, I think he has some sort of, it creates like an illness or some damage to his brain that kills him later on. He has to, so some high caliber bullets there, just knocking him back.
Yeah.
This is a cool fight, by the way.
It is a cool fight.
This is a really, really good fight.
And it shows that you can do stakes with a Superman fight. He's not omnipotent.
No, exactly.
But he still hurled himself in the path of bullets because it's the right thing to do.
Exactly. And again, it was going to hurt him. Those bullets are going to knock him back. You know, they're going to cause damage. Call the police. You know, standard. I'm going to stop that thing.
It's like, I imagine it's like being shot with a rubber bullet.
Like,
it's not going to kill you, but it'll really hurt.
Yeah, I love that big jump there from the shot.
It's cool, isn't it?
I love how it twists, the top half twists.
Yeah,
kind of like Ed 209 a little bit
like Ed 209. Yeah. It just reminded me of the bit in Iron Man 2 where it twists all around and kills the pilot.
That's a bit like Robocop 2 with all the place of Robocops.
Yeah.
That's one of my favourite scenes in all of the Robocop films. Introducing Robocop 2.
I love that the suit sort of electrocutes itself when he gets on it as well.
It's got all these kind of design.
But again, this
idea of... just going to walk away. He's probably dead.
This idea of Superman testing his limits.
Bloody hell, look at that kick.
That's so cool.
That is amazing. I forgot how good this fight is. I knew it was good, but I forgot how good it was.
You don't get many sort of Superman doing fisticuffs things as well, so I'm really
like
it.
I think in a lot of the movies, for the longest time, like Superman 2 was like the only one where he'd literally punch anybody.
Yeah.
Superman 4, but we don't talk about that.
No, we don't.
I love that he ejects the cartridge and it goes...
it goes through the window. The
car, and it's like, that's causing damage as well. Yeah. Just ejecting.
But it's just a little visual cue of like how powerful this thing is.
Yeah.
Because if you don't do that, then you make Superman look like a bit of a pushover.
He's really giving it to him. The bullets are really doing
it's knocking him down.
He's actually physically looking for cover,
shredding a cement mixer. That's so cool.
Still pick it up though. Oh no, he's gonna go for the gas tank. Stupid move, my friend.
But it's not, because he doesn't know he can just lob it at him like that.
I do love Michael McDowell in pretty much anything.
He's
got a great voice. Just fantastic. I mean, you only have to go back to Clockwork Orange.
Like
that. It's got one. He does one of my favorite intros to a film is Gangster Number One. Have you seen that?
Yes, I have. Yeah. Doesn't Paul Bettany play the younger version?
That's right. Yeah, and he's at this big soiree and he's taking a piss and he's put champagne glass down next to the urinal. You can see him accidentally pissing into the champagne glass.
That's right. Yeah.
Goes to pick it up, looks at the camera and goes to drink it, and he looks back at the camera and goes, "What do you think I am? I can't." I was like, that's probably one of the best openings of all time. Very, very, very not in line with what we're seeing here.
Very much not.
But it's a good entry. I would highly recommend Gangster Number One as well.
This suit is armed to the teeth.
God,
he's got napalm, he's got missiles, he's got...
He's really kicking Superman's ass, like, considering, like... Did we ever see? No, we do. Yeah, in kind of Justice League, we see Lex have a kind of suit, don't we?
I was going to say,
look at that.
This idea of a green robot suit does kind of call back to the sort of Lex
battle
suit.
This fight is amazing.
It is really good.
This is so, so good. I forgot how good it was. This is why I wanted to do it, because I hadn't seen this in so long. And it is one of the most, pull his arm off.
and hits him with it. Go on, hits him with it. Hits oh, no, him with not. It. He doesn't hit him with it. He rips the other arm off and...
Yes!
There you go. Knocked him on his back with it.
Yes, brilliant. Fantastic. Oh yeah, backslip.
Why not? In a big robot
this
suit.
Is, yeah, this is quite an agile... This is a good machine. And Superman is still being it. Wobbling. It's this like, is like Ed 209.
It's like Monty Python and the Holy Grail with the Black Knight. I'm invincible! You're a loony.
I love that he just... It's not even using his super breath, really. He just blows it over.
Yeah, I like that. That's really cool. And this...
Oh, I think this is where he gets injured, doesn't he? It's like messes with his brain or something. Oh, yes. That's a badass Superman. Shall we go a few rounds without the suit?
That's so cool. Yeah.
Oh, that's what I like. I like seeing Superman as a badass. And, you know, he's not just, you know, this hokey, don't take drugs, kids.
He still gets pissed off sometimes. Yeah.
Like he went through that was a fight. That was a genuine fight.
There you go. So the region has arranged with Lex Luthor. There you go. We have an understanding. Yeah. So he's just lost $1 billion.
Yeah. He's lost a lot of money. And they did. They did take possession. He's right.
And I love, and you just see in the background a Superman hovering, and it just shows you can do badass Superman.
Yeah. It's almost a little bit creepy as well. Like, it's a little bit like, you know, almost like a horror character sneaking up behind you.
But also, it's that idea of you think you're up here inscrutable in your ivory tower, but I can see you. I'm always watching you. Yeah.
The silent treatment.
And he just stares at. He just hovers there, staring reproachfully. That's so cool.
I love this though. He goes, I don't know what you heard, but you can't prove it. I'm untouchable. This is my city. I have a giant L in this city. I own this place.
He's got this brilliant monologue coming up now, like about how he owned Metropolis and my technology built it, my will keeps it going, and nearly 2/3 of his people work for me, whether they know it or not.
Oh,
that's so Lex Luthor right there.
That is. This is it. This is the classic as Lex Luthor gets. I know in later iterations, they went back to the more kind of mad scientist. But I do like the corrupt businessman. I honestly think that maybe John Byrne's Man of Steel run did kind of maybe base it on Donald Trump a little bit.
Possibly.
I can see that. I can definitely see that. The balding billionaire.
Yeah.
Who has, you know.
Because he did have that comb over as well. Yeah. The ginger comb over.
Always had the. And he loses his hair during that Man of Steel series. I'll be watching you.
I love that as well. He throws the model at him and he just crumbles it to dust.
Yeah. Not finished with you.
And now we go. Superman doing a triumphant flyby through the streets.
They love Superman already.
Like, if you did a Superman movie. Like just fleshing these three episodes out. That's pretty much everything you need right there, isn't it?
I remember reading or hearing. Is that the end? Oh no,
no. We got this is sort of like the post credit sequence before there were post credit sequences.
Yeah, you're right. I forgot so about
this. You've got these alien sort of space adventurers, and they see this little pod, little innocuous pod. What could that be?
Can't be. This is probably harmless, isn't it?
Oh, we know that.
Welcome. Yeah. I don't think that logo was necessarily linked to Brainiac before, was it?
Well, it's the three little sort of ports on his head. Yeah. I think he's always had those, but I think this is the first time it's been his sort of like symbol.
Okay, yeah. Like, I guess you have to have a kind of Superman symbol.
Possibly, I could be wrong.
So is this that he's been floating all these years and is this the latest bit of information he's gathered?
Yeah, I think he's been floating all these years, and this alien thing, it's just like kind of like with Doomsday, these aliens just happen upon him.
Yeah.
And he sort of usurps their technology and he's coming to Earth. So yeah, that was it. That was three episodes of Superman the Animated Series, the three-part pilot.
Now, we can still chat a bit. We've still got a bit of time.
I'd like to
keep talking if we can. That's why I decided that the hour is good, because it gives us a bit more kind of breathing room.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think I listened to these commentaries a few years ago when I first got them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think initially what they were going to do was, we saw at the end that Superman was being cheered, he was being celebrated. But I think initially the idea was that they were going to go the route of them mistrusting him and not being, you know,
okay,
like he's an alien, we're not sure what he'll do, we're not sure why he's doing it, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to go that kind of mistrustful route. And it sounds interesting, it sounds a uniquely unique idea. However, they were like, it's Superman.
Yeah.
You can't really do that. You can't, like, this, the Spider-Man and the X-Men, sure, they can kind of get away with it.
Yeah.
But I think with Superman, you do have to be, you know, it's, again, he's a guardian angel. He comes out, he does all these things without being asked to, without being, you know, no one's requiring him to do them. He just does them because they're right.
I think it's well-trodden ground. I know they briefly did it in the Lois and Clark show. I think they did something like where how Superman was causing global warming or something like that. By all means, do stories where the tide turns against Superman. Yeah. But I think given the sort of like the age demographic that they were going for, I think maybe it's not, I think
no,
it's not, they're like, it's certainly not something you do straight away.
No, I think maybe, I think they do build to it towards the end of this series with, is it Legacy? I think the episodes are called Legacy, where he is repurposed into a soldier of Darkseid.
Yes, that's right. So,
And I think that episode does play a lot into Justice League and Justice League Unlimited later on.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
There's a Cadmus storyline, isn't there, where human beings are worried that the Justice League have too much power.
Yes. So
they're planning to do things with it. And the questions arguing that maybe they shouldn't have this much power. There should be, you know, a bit like, you know, Civil War. There should be some form of
checks and balances.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think this is a great play. If you've never seen any of the kind of Justice League Unlimited, even Batman Beyond, to a lesser extent, if you've never seen any of those, I think actually Superman is a better place to start if you're going to look at all that. But Batman is still amazing.
Yeah.
On its own merits, still very good. Even the new adventures of Batman, which they brought back after this was popular.
That's right, yeah. And I think they changed the aesthetic to fit more in with the Superman animated series. I'm sure they said that in one of the commentary tracks or something.
Yeah, I think that was a good idea because I know they had less money, so they had to redesign a lot of the characters. I know the Joker gets a new design, which is not my favorite.
Yeah, I don't like quite a lot of the redesigns they did of those characters. The only ones I like are Scarecrow and I think Scarecrow's the only one I really like.
I remember Bane looked more like an S&M freak.
Yeah, I didn't like Bane.
The Mad Hatter looked very, very creepy.
Riddler looked silly, but no.
Yeah, Riddler was just like it was just a full bodysuit.
Green bodysuit. Yeah.
I've heard that, like, for me, I prefer the Riddler that's less like the Joker. He's more of a sophisticated.
Yeah.
He's more intelligent. He has a condition where he has to give out these riddles, but he can, if you're not careful, he can go down that Joker route.
Yeah.
But I prefer the traps and the riddles and the all those kind of crossword and the puzzles. And even figuring them out myself makes me kind of feel like I'm playing the part of Batman a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is quite nice.
But this is, you're absolutely right. This is the sort of explosion outwards into a DC animated universe. Mm. Like, because we had, I think, 3 years of Batman, and then this was 96,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, you're right.
And so this sort of like made the world a little bit bigger, and like you said, introduced the Flash, introduced Kyle Rayner, Green Lantern. Yeah,
I love that Flash episode.
Introduced
great.
Aquaman. Yeah, superb. Yeah.
So it kind of grows from here. If you're, you know, I do like the Justice League show. Sometimes I think it kind of falters because they go with a two episode.
That's right.
Layouts. They have always either had a two-parter or a three-parter.
Yeah.
There was one-off episode, which is a Christmas episode, I remember.
That's right, yeah.
But then when it went, for me, Justice League Unlimited was the pinnacle of everything.
That's when they sort of found their rhythm, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And Batman Beyond, I love as well.
It's excellent, yeah.
Truly is really, and it's a really good kind of teenage show. It's kind of, it is the best parts of Spider-Man, the best parts of Batman,
yeah,
mixed in with a kind of futuristic Akira, like,
yeah, I was going to say a little bit of Akira. Yeah. I think it's even called Neo Gotham.
There you go. But they're all amazing shows with a lot of amazing talent behind it. And the DC animated features that came after it, and some of them were in between the shows, like Mask of the Phantasm, Sub Zero, not the Mortal Kombat character, but the Batman
Sub Zero, Mystery of the Batwoman as well. That's one that keeps getting overlooked.
Yeah, I wasn't a massive fan of that one. I really wasn't, unfortunately.
I thought it was all right. I thought it was better than the Harley Quinn one that they did a couple of years ago. I thought that sucked donkey balls. Frankly,
fair enough.
Wasn't impressed.
Was that the one with Swamp Thing and Floronic Man?
Yeah, Swamp Thing just rocks up for 5 minutes and goes, bye.
Yeah, pretty much. There's a lot of humour to it, though. I appreciate it, but I wasn't sure about the whole Nightwing sleeping with Harley Quinn. That was a bit odd.
And also, like, Harley Quinn just sort of, like, revenge farting in the Batmobile.
Yeah.
And then smells like discipline.
and then singing some Blondie.
Oh yeah. Do you know what? I'm going to give it a rewatch because
I actually watched it relatively recently. I thought it was okay. I didn't think it was, but I think you have to go in with that like-minded attitude that it is a comedy.
It's yeah.
Not to take it too seriously.
I think I would have enjoyed it a lot more if it wasn't very sort of explicitly this version of those characters.
Yes.
I think if they didn't have it, like the visual trappings of that.
The
Bruce Timm verse sort of, and Kevin Conroy, Lauren Lester. If you hadn't done that, then I would have been able to take it much less seriously. But because you're making it part of that canon, even tangentially, it just rubbed me up the wrong way a little bit.
For me, I'm going to say something that might upset a few people. I don't think I like the modern iteration of Harley Quinn. I think she's overexposed.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's entirely overexposed now. People, you know, even non-comic book fans know her, but they know her in a certain form. It's almost, I don't know, I find it irritating.
She's become very much sort of an anti, hasn't she? I think she's in DC Superhero Girls sort of pantheon.
She is. Yeah. I'm glad. I like her heroic slant. I don't mind that at all.
Mm-hmm.
I like that she's away from the Joker, because obviously that's a completely abusive relationship. So I like those elements, but everything else, the kind of modern humor, the overt sexuality of the, I mean, the character's always been overtly sexual anyway, I think, to a point, but it's almost too much now.
Okay.
Look at Suicide Squad and even that animated movie as well. She's almost become a caricature of herself, I think.
A little bit, yeah. I see where you're coming from.
And I just don't appreciate it a lot. I mean, I always, those original episodes that feature Harley Quinn are amazing. You know, Mad Love, all those kind of things are really good. And I think they really nail the psychology of the character and the fun. And I love that Harlequinade is a great episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's another Harley and Batman teaming up episode. And those are some fun episodes and good episodes and great spotlights. With
Harley and Ivy, that was a great episode.
Another great one. But again, that's my, like I said, these are the classic iterations of those characters.
Yeah.
And sometimes, for better or for worse, that's what's in my head. That's what's stuck in my head.
They did a little bit of a promo for this animated Harley Quinn series, which I think is coming on the DC Universe.
And it's an adult thing, isn't it? Adult only.
Yeah, and it seemed like they were very much trying to make her into sort of DC's female Deadpool, almost.
Yeah.
I'll go into it with an open mind.
It's the blonde Kelly Cuoco
from Big Bang Theory.
That's correct. Yeah, she's playing the part. And I think what's his name? Can't remember his name. Batman the Brave and the Bold. Batman
Dietrich Bader.
That's the one. I love his voice. I think he's back as Batman.
Yes, I believe so.
Highly recommend Batman the Brave and the Bold if you're after a really kooky, zany kind of love letter to the Silver Age of comics. And if you're interested in other DC characters you've never seen before but love Batman, it's a really, really, really good show, which, again, I think we'll spotlight on this in the future if you'd like to join me again.
Absolutely, I had a great time, yeah.
I have a huge love for animation as it is, and like I said, I've got a massive list of, you know, a massive pile of DVDs, you know, from Dragon Ball Z to The Tick, you know, all these kind of weird and wacky things.
It's all good stuff.
But yeah, I highly recommend looking at this, and it's one of the best iterations of Superman there is, bar none.
Yeah.
You know, and it's highly, highly underrated as a show, and it is forgotten, unfortunately, because of the popularity of Batman Beyond, Justice League, and, you know, they're all, and again, all great, all connected, but I think this is the best place to look at that ever-expanding DC animated universe, and kind of it's the taking off point.
Yeah. If you ever wanted sort of like get to know Superman as a character rather than as an icon, but you don't want to wade through 80 years worth of comics, this is how you go about it. This is where you start, definitely.
Exactly. And again, this is there's many writers on this, but they have they're a writing team, so they're all having input, so obviously different episodes are written by different people, but there is a set way that they write Superman, the way they portray Superman,
cohesive.
Exactly, and it's a hell of a team. Again, we've talked about the talent involved. But yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. And I'd probably like to talk about some other episodes again, you know, another time. Maybe the next three on after this, maybe perhaps, or
yeah.
You know, we'll see what we feel like.
Absolutely.
I know you've got a good catalogue of these DC.
Yeah, we'll maybe cherry pick some, or like we'll have a little curated selection of episodes we'll cover. But yeah, definitely.
No,
definitely.
Brilliant. I think we can leave it there for a day.
Yes, I think. Thank you so much for inviting me back. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've very much enjoyed my time on Prattle World.
Always. You are always a pleasure to have. Just to where you can find us again. So if you have any opinions on Superman the Animated Series, or if you'd like to tell us what we should watch or anything we've not talked about.
Well, yeah.
If you've got any little IMDb tidbits that you could tell us that we didn't already mention, that's all good. So you can find me at Secret Balls on Facebook. So if you type that in the search bar at the top, you'll find us at Secret Balls, all one word. Or I'm on Twitter at Dan_Balls. And I'm also, where else am I? Where the podcast is available on Spotify, YouTube, Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, you name it. It's pretty much on all of them. I've curated it so it happens, so everyone can find me from all over the world. But yeah, it's been absolutely a blast. Please do come back, because you are one of my favorite guests.
I'll be happy to return to Prattle World anytime.
Fantastic. Well, that has been us. I've been Dan. He's been Dan. Goodbye.
Bye.